The following paid program does not represent the views of North Shore 104.9. Welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. This morning during the program, your host, Mark Friedman, may discuss specific financial planning and investment ideas. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Financial planning and investment advice is offered through Friedman Financial, an SEC-registered investment advisor located in Peabody, Massachusetts. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, a member of FINRA and SIPC. Friedman Financial is a separate entity from LPL Financial. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Always consult a certified financial planner professional, qualified attorney, or tax advisor prior to investing to determine what is appropriate for you. And now, here's the host of Dollars and Cents, Mark Friedman of Friedman Financial.
Good morning and welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. Nice to be back. I've been away for the week. I was in India, of all places, invited to speak at a conference of financial advisors, 600 financial advisors in Mumbai, India, where I had the opportunity to speak there, met many people, got to experience the culture. I'm going to tell you all about that later on in the show. But today is not to really talk to start about India. What's today? Today is Super Bowl Sunday. Are you ready? Hopefully you're sleeping, actually, because we got a late night ahead of us. Kickoff is around 6:30, I believe, today. Everything's happening down in Houston. The last time Patriots played in Houston, I was actually there. Yeah, I was there for the Carolina Panthers game, which was really a great, great Super Bowl game. I don't know if you remember it. I'm not sure what number it was. I forget all the X's and the L's and the V's and the I's and all that stuff. But I went down with a friend of mine who told us that we were able to get tickets. He knew a friend that worked at the Patriots ticket office or whatever, and he was going to get us tickets, and we had to go to one of the hotels, meet somewhere at a hotel in Houston. And so we did that, got our tickets, had to spend four nights in a little Hampton Inn or some little hotel that we paid like $400 a night for. It was absolutely insane, but you had to stay there for three or four nights to get the deal. I mean, they raise all the prices. It was ridiculous. So we get to, I think it was called Reliant Stadium at the time. It wasn't NRG Stadium. So we get to Houston. We go to the Super Bowl. When you get into the Super Bowl, by the way, just something that you know, if you don't know, this is my second Super Bowl. I actually played the halftime show at Super Bowl 20. We can talk about that if you really want to. That was when the Patriots played the Bears. You know, Refrigerator Perry, Patriots got killed. But this is the one, Patriots play the Panthers. So we go to our seats, and the seats that we have, they were very nice. They were in the club seats, not in the suites, but in the club seats. So you get a drink holder. I mean, that's kind of what you get in the club seats. But every seat there has a bag, like a swag bag. Full of stuff. First thing you get in there is a seat cushion. So there's a seat cushion with the logo of the Super Bowl that was on there. I'm trying to think, maybe it was Super Bowl 32. I don't remember, because I can picture the logo. But so the logo's there. Then inside it is a transistor radio. Now you would never see a transistor radio now, but there's a transistor radio so that you could tune into Gino Capoletti, who was up in the box, and you could listen to him call in the game on your little earplug that you'd put in while you were watching it, or you could see it live from the stadium. A couple other little things. Oh, and then there's also, of course, the color card. Look, every halftime show has one of those things where, you know, you hold up your card and you make the stadium look like a rainbow, or you make it spell out words or whatever it was. But one thing that happened at that Super Bowl that I didn't know what happened until I got back to my hotel room that night was that was the year of the Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction. I had no idea it happened, of course, because I'm not watching it on TV and, you know, trying to see, what was it? A Super Bowl 38. Thank you. I appreciate that, Tony. My producer always working hard, even while I'm working here on the radio. So Super Bowl 38. And I didn't know about the Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction, but I will tell you this. The game was very, very exciting. Game went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. The problem was, is my buddy and I, where were our seats? Our seats happened to be in the Carolina Panthers family section. So the entire section that we're in is turquoise, with the exception of the two of us wearing Patriots shirts, Tom Brady shirts or whatever it is that we were wearing at the time. And it was like the battle of, you know, 400 people versus two back and forth. We ended up winning at the end. So that was a lot of fun and a great time in Houston. Houston is a great host for a city. Lots of things to do. And I'm sure it's even better now. I'm sure they learned from their last Super Bowl experience. But here's a few Super Bowl facts as you prepare for tonight's game. I mean, Patriots are playing the Atlanta Falcons. Matty Ryan out of Boston College is the superstar over there for the Falcons. You know who the superstar is here for the Patriots. That's Julian Edelman. No, I mean, he's a great guy, of course, but everyone knows it's Tom Brady. It's Bill Belichick. It's the entire team. I mean, they never get introduced individually. And I think that's something really interesting. Just a few weeks ago, I happened to have the opportunity to go to North Carolina, and I went to a Carolina Panthers game. I forget who they were playing. Oh, the San Diego Chargers they were playing. So I'm at the Carolina Panthers game, and to introduce, just like they do in at Gillette, when they introduce the Patriots, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the New England Patriots. No. At the Carolina Panthers game, they introduce every starting player individually and with different theme music and different rah-rah and all this cheering. It was like, you know, I give a lot of credit to the Patriots for just doing it as a team. I really think that's something that's very, very impressive. And it's something that I really have come to appreciate. This is Super Bowl 51, held at NRG Stadium in Houston. The Super Bowl 50 was played at Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara, where the Denver Broncos defeated the Carolina Panthers. Of course, that was Peyton Manning's last game. They won 24-10. Von Miller was named the MVP. Who do you think will be named MVP of this Super Bowl? My guess is that if the Patriots win, Tom Brady will be named Super Bowl MVP. I think they've got a good chance to win, but who knows? I mean, both teams have incredible offenses. They're 1-2. I think Atlanta has the number one offense. The Patriots have number two. Patriots have a really good defense. Falcons, not so great of a rated defense. So that could be the deciding factor, but we'll see. You know, anything can happen any given Sunday, and we will see what happens. Lady Gaga expected to perform the halftime show during the Super Bowl. Halftime shows, they go way back, 51 years of them. Did you know who has done more halftime shows than anybody else at the Super Bowl? Up With People. That's right. Up With People has performed more halftime shows than any other organization. Super Bowl 20 was the last time they did a halftime show, and I was part of it. That's right. I played the keyboards. I was the guy in the yellow sweatshirt on the 50-yard line playing Born in the USA. It's Bruce Springsteen. We played a little Stevie Wonder. We played a whole bunch of different songs. But yeah, we were the entertainment. Super Bowl 20 had the chance of sitting on the field. They actually set up a few little bleachers in the corners of each part of the field where 600 of us who were part of the halftime show could watch the game. And then we had 2.5 minutes to set up our stage, get into position, and do the halftime show. So you got to understand something. When you see these halftime shows, none of it is live, folks. You got to understand, none of it's live. Just like the Macy's Day Parade, none of it is live. How is it possible? Think about when you go to a concert. If you go to a concert at Gillette, you go to a concert at Fenway, you go to a concert even at the TD Garden. Think about how many hours, how many days it takes to do the sound checks and make sure that everything's right. You have 2.5 minutes, which is the time between the last play of the first half, commercials, and maybe a quick little recap by the NFL, and then you go to the halftime show. You have 2.5 minutes to set up your stage, set up your sound equipment. I played the keyboard, Super Bowl 20. It wasn't plugged in. Though there was a cord going into the back of the keyboard, it wasn't plugged into anything else. None of the microphones worked. Really, none of the microphones worked. Yes, people wear headpieces and they wear headsets and all that kind of stuff. Do you know why? If you're in the middle of the 50-yard line singing, do you know what the sound quality is to get it out to equally to every single person all around the stadium? Not to mention, it has to match the sound that is actually sent through to the television. It's just virtually impossible. Think about that. When you hear a band playing, how many times have you heard a band where you know they're playing on one side of the field, but it takes maybe a half a second for the sound to actually reach you? Think about how long it takes to get all the way around the arena. You can't even play the instruments. It would screw everything up. So we actually, just to tell you the truth of how this all happened, Super Bowl 20, when I did the halftime show, we actually went to a studio. We taped and built a recording of the halftime show. That's what we did with the vocalists, with the band. So we all knew what we were playing. We played it 1,000 times. and no one's looking that closely at the fingers on the keys. And I was playing the keyboard. There were three keyboard players. There were, I think, four guitar players, six trumpeteers or brass players. There was actually two drum sets up on stage. But it was all part of the studio, all done in the studio. It was all fake. But that's how that works. But the game is real. I will tell you, the game is real. I still haven't figured out how they're able to superimpose those stripes on the field that says, you know, here's the 10-yard line or a number of yards left to go before a field goal. I think that's pretty cool how they do that. But, you know, we got a lot of stuff in store. Did you know that the 30-second commercials, when I did the Super Bowl 20, it was $600,000 for a 30-second spot. This year, you know what it is? $5 million. $5 million. And there's the truth is that some companies will run their ad a few times. Now, you're going to have close to... I'm trying to see the number of viewers here. They're expecting 112 million viewers. 112 million viewers are expected at least for this Super Bowl. It could even hit 115. When I did the Super Bowl, I was told that it was about 75 million people watching the Super Bowl. It's really amazing. So 2 years ago, a little bit more information about the Super Bowl. I know that we talk about, this is Mark Friedman, by the way, we're talking about dollars and cents, financial advice in a language you can understand. Sometimes I try to bring it fun and make it real in today's Super Bowl, and so let's keep it going with that. 2 years ago, Patriots played the Seattle Seahawks. I think we all remember that one, Super Bowl 49. 2 minutes left to go in the game, and we were pretty much feeling pretty miserable because it looked like Seattle was marching up the field. Marshawn Lynch, who was the destroyer, he could just pile through everybody. 2 yard line, a minute left to go. Marshawn Lynch, give him the ball, let him run it into the end zone. But no. Pete Carroll felt otherwise. Why do what we think everyone's going to do? Let's instead give it to Russell Wilson and let him try to toss the ball. And this guy, I had no idea who this guy was. Some guy intercepted the ball for the Patriots and the game was basically over. Malcolm Butler has now become a common household name for anybody who's certainly a Patriots fan. What was really funny was, and you can do this, if you go to YouTube and if you type in YouTube and you go to BBC Super Bowl 49, you're going to find a little video clip. This little video clip showcases BBC TV, you know, the world's largest news network. They broadcasted live from my house immediately following the Patriots winning the Super Bowl. See, what happened was I have a friend of mine who is a producer for BBC in England, in London. And she had called us up earlier that day and she had said, Mark, are you having a Super Bowl party at home? Because if the Patriots win, we'd like to go to live to your home and get fan reaction. However, if they lose, we have people in Seattle to do the same thing. And so I said, sure. I said, how are we going to do it? So we set up a Skype call, the whole thing. It's all going to work. And we're 5 minutes left in the game. She calls me up. She says to me, Mark, she says, no need to stay on hold. It looks like we're just going to go live to Seattle. It looks like this game's going to be over. So we're watching the game, and, you know, we're all getting miserable. It just wasn't going to happen. And then the reaction. Then the reaction happens, and Malcolm Butler intercepts the ball. There's now a minute left, and we're just screaming and yelling. Someone yells, Mark, the phone's ringing. The phone's ringing. So I go to answer the phone, and it's Cheryl, my friend. And she says to me, can we go live? And so, sure enough, we flip up my computer, the game ends, and we must have 30 people at our house. And if you go to YouTube and you type in BBC Super Bowl 49 or something like that, you will see me and a whole bunch of other people. I was the interviewer doing this little interview. It was really, really kind of interesting. But the thing is, he says, so tell me about this, the interception, how it all worked. And I'm like stumbling over my tongue because I'm going, Does anybody know the name of the guy that intercepted the ball? We had no idea who it was. Things will happen. It could come down to special teams. You never know what's going to happen. You never know. So I can tell you what I do know, though. I can tell you that the world that we live in today is different in the views that other people have all around the rest of the world. I traveled to India this past week, and man, were my eyes open. When we come back, I'm going to tell you a story, a bunch of stories about my experience in India and what we could learn from these amazing people. We'll be right back. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
Isn't it time to get serious about your retirement planning? Friedman Financial is a financial planning and investment management firm in Peabody. They've been helping professionals and retirees put solid strategies into play for 40 years. When you're planning to get serious about planning for retirement, call Friedman Financial for a free initial consultation at 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. Or go online to FriedmanFinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, Financial.com.
If I had $1 million.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. We're having a lot of fun today. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president, CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, where we provide financial planning and investment management advice to individuals and families who live on the North Shore, the Merrimack Valley, and the southern New Hampshire area. I'm blown away, frankly, by the number of calls, the emails, the letters, the meets on the street that I have with all of you. I love the number of listeners. I had no idea there were so many listeners who actually tune into this show and you express your appreciation. Someone had sent me an email just this past week, actually. I forget his or her name. Apparently, I use the word niche. You know, there's a niche to a business. And he or she wrote back to me saying that she didn't want to be the grammar police, but she says, it's niche, not niche. I actually think it's either. I think either is okay. But for you, I just wanted to let you know that I did get your email, and I appreciate it. So, I'm still more inclined to use the word niche rather than niche, but thanks for listening. And the other comment, though, that you did make is that you really enjoyed it. You really enjoy the show when I talk about financial advice for the working class, for the middle America, for people that really don't get to receive the advice that they feel like they can get. Most people seem to, when they hear the word financial planning, they think, oh, financial planning is only for the wealthy. Folks, financial planning is for everybody. Did you know financial planning is one of the most booming professions in India? Now, I'm going to tell you about this. I'm going to tell you some stories about financial planning in India, and you tell me where the financial planning is really viewed at for the super wealthy, because all of a sudden, anybody here who is listening that puts themselves in the middle class, you are going to feel super wealthy in a second. So I was there last week. I was invited to speak to 600 financial advisors at the Lalit Hotel in Mumbai, India. Financial planning, investment management has grown tremendously over the past 10 years, but their life in investing and financial planning is back where we were, frankly, in the 60s and 70s. They got a lot to learn, a lot of things to do. In fact, they make promises to their investors right now. If you were an investor, they said, oh, well, we're going to do some projections that's going to assume that you're going to earn anywhere between 11 and 15% a year. And your safe investments, your CDs and bonds, are going to get you between 6 and 8%. I'd be thrown out of business if I made those promises here. And their basis right now in India is, well, historically, over the past 10 years, we're actually erring on the low side. Growth in India these days is huge. The skyscrapers that are popping up left and right, the businesses that are growing, the utilization of technology in India is beyond what any of us could possibly imagine. But there's a lot of corruption too. Anytime there's growth, the government can come in and say, well, we'll take a 50% tax on your growth. They can do that too. So things change. But one of the things that I found interesting is that the people of India, where there's 1.3 billion people, 1.3 billion. We have 330 million here in America. So the country of India is roughly the size of America east of the Mississippi. If you took everything east of the Mississippi and kind of folded it up into an upside down triangle, that's what India looks like, kind of. But there's 1.3 billion people living on it, living in it. And get this, only 7% of the land is utilized with inhabitants. Most of it is desert, forests, land, mountains, the Himalayas. It's the Himalayas as far as I was concerned, but they kept on referring to it as the Himalayas. I'm going, what the heck are the Himalayas? 70% of the 1.3 billion people live in the slums. There's a big slum. There's lots of slums. Everywhere you turn, there's slums. Some are big, some are small, some are resident. Most are residential slums. Some are a combination of residential and industrial. In fact, if you saw the movie Slumdog Millionaire, remember that movie Slumdog Millionaire? Well, I went to the Dharavi slums, which were about 3 miles away from my hotel, and took a tour of the Dharavi slums. And everybody warned me, Mark, why are you doing that? Why would you want to go there? Why do you want to humiliate the people that are there and walk around as a, you know, as an American, you know, just prominent, or, you know, just anybody who comes from America? It doesn't matter what you make. You just look like you've got this chip on your shoulder, right? And I was told it was a great experience. Well, not only was it a great experience, it was a life-changing experience. Dharavi is a 1 square mile area. And 1 million people live in 1 square mile. I want you to imagine what 1 square mile looks like. It's kind of hard for you to imagine what that looks like. But 1 million people living in that space. These 1 million people, most work for $2 to $4 a day. Now, where do they get their money from? Most of their money is from industry, which consists of recycling, reusing, and repurposing things. Kids at the age of five start to wander the streets, the riverways, the swamps, the dirt roads, anywhere they can possibly find, and they go digging in the trash with these huge burlap sacks, filling them up with anything that's like a plastic water bottle, a Cisco oil container, anything that's plastic, anything that's plastic. Let's say you had some kind of a toy car or a telephone, whatever it is that you threw away. Those are all made of plastic, right? So these kids collect all this stuff up. Now, this could be a 5-year-old. It could be anybody. It could be up to 30 years old. And they're carrying around these big, huge bags, and they have this wheelbarrow that they've built where they have bags that are 3 times as high and as wide as they are, and they're pushing them up and down the streets, all so that they can get 10 rupee, and 10 rupee is about 6 or 7 cents, 6 or 7 cents per kilo of plastic. Now, I'm not quite sure what a kilo really weighs, but a kilo is pretty decent. They then bring that to a person in the Dharavi slums, of where there are 4 and 5 people, the dirtiest feet you've ever seen. None of them wear socks. None of them wear shoes, let alone that. They're working in these dark, closed quarters that might be 5 feet by 10 feet. The ceilings are no more than 6 feet high. So they're slumped over. They're sitting. You know, there's this squatting position that a lot of people in Asia sit like, you know, their feet are flat to the ground, their bums almost touching the ground, and they sit there comfortably all day long. And they sit there in these dark, damp quarters where they empty out the bags and they start sorting the plastics. They sort plastics first for color. And that's their job all day long, is to go through the sacks and sort them for color. Now, once they've been sorted for color, they bag those up and pass them on to the next group. These guys make $2 a day working 12 hours a day. 12 hours a day doing this. They then sort it and send it to the next business, which could be 2 or 4 offices. They're not far from offices. They are small little garages, if that, but they're the fraction of a garage size. This next group then takes all of the, let's say, the clear plastics and sorts them by the grading of the plastic. Is it a plastic like a bottle that you can squeeze? Or is it a plastic like a phone that you can't squeeze? It's much harder. They sort those. Those then are all bagged up, and they make $3 and $4 a day. Those are then bagged up, put on a truck, which then drives 3 hours out into out into India, where there's a factory, where there's another slum that's there, where all day long they're melting down the plastics and extruding them, where they stretch them out, recycle them, and turn them back into colored pellets. The pellets then move on to another extruding facility where they remake things, whether it's phones, whether it's desks, whether it's whatever they choose to make. And then they sell them back. But they sell them to big corporations. Now, how much money did it cost to recycle all of that stuff, to go through all that. It cost pennies, pennies. Now, they do the same thing with leather goods. They do the same thing with paper, with cardboard. All of that same stuff is happening. And with metals, of course, too. What we saw, what the gentleman took me through, was they just display a little showroom to give you an example of what the stuff is that's built. Now, this showroom is nothing fancy, nothing at all, but they'd show that so the people who go in these slums can appreciate what you see. Oftentimes, for instance, when you're traveling down Fifth Avenue or Park Avenue of New York, you know, you see all those shops, those electronic shops, and then they have all the 70% off luggage goods and American Tourister and Samsonite and all that stuff. Well, you'll notice those are not American Tourister or Samsonite stores, are they? No, they're just selling those goods. All of those products, every single one of them, were made in Dharavi, in the slums. In the slums they're made. They're made, and all American tourists, all people do is they find, make American Tourister labels or Samsonite labels, and they stick them on the suitcases. In fact, they show you, they hot stamp the word Dharavi on it. And under and on top of the Dharavi thing, you see a Samsonite or an American Tourister or whatever it is, and they go to these shops. It's $1 billion in revenue. Oh, another one that was fascinating to me. I was telling Muggs about this because, as many of you guys may know, Muggs does painting on the side. Paints houses, paints a lot of things. Well, what do you do when you're finished using a paint can? What do you do when you're finished using a paint can? Or you just, or, you know, you got a bunch of paint cans and you just want to throw them away or move them somewhere? Did you know that all of those paint cans, there are boats that package up all of those destroyed paint cans and ship them to India, and they go to the Dharavi slums. And so I sat and walked through with my wife. We watched these guys working 12 hours a day, sometimes even more, because this is what they do all day long. They take the paint cans. There's some paint inside of them sometimes. First thing they do is they clean them all out. They have all these oils and distilleries and waters or whatever it is. They clean them all out. But oftentimes, paint cans get banged up. They get banged up on the side. They get banged up from where you lifted the lid and all that stuff. There are guys that sit there with these tiny little tools that bang out the dents. They bang out the dents. They repolish up the cans. And what do you think they do with the cans? They put them back on the boat and send them to Benjamin Moore or whomever it is, and they reuse the cans. For pennies. For pennies. Yes, there is one toilet for every 1,000 people in the Dharavi slums. The living conditions are not pleasant. They get water 2 times a day for 2 hours. There's a small amount. You can have electricity for a very reasonable cost. But the lifestyle, the people living there, love each other. Family is everything. You're surrounded by a Muslim, Hindu, Maharashtra, Parsi, all these different types of religions and beliefs. There's mosques and temples, and everybody gets along. It is crowded. It is noisy. It is smelly. I never saw a fight. Never saw an argument. I saw a lot of people get bumped into, and people would just laugh it off. There were times when I wanted to just knock someone over because they were just in my way or not moving fast enough, but I learned to restrain myself. These people are peaceful. They love what they do, and they work for dollars a day. It's 70% of the population in India. And you begin to wonder, why is financial planning becoming such a big deal in India? Why would they bring someone like me to India to talk to 600 financial advisors at a very nice hotel? Well, I'm going to tell you when we get back. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial, North Shore 4.9.
The blockbuster 2017 musical season has been announced for Bill Haney's North Shore Music Theater, and you won't want to miss a show. 76 trombones and the big parade. Join in the parade when the classic American musical, The Music Man, marches on stage to open the season in June. In July, you're invited to be our guest when we present the magical family production of Disney's Beauty and the Beast. The summer continues with one monster of a hit show.
It's alive!
Young Frankenstein, the hilarious Mel Brooks musical. Then join us in the fall for a brand new production of the Tony Award-winning musical, Evita. The season will end with a dazzling production of 42nd Street, the Tap Dance Spectacular. Become a season subscriber and see all five shows from the best seats at the lowest prices. Book your tickets at nsmt.org and make a memory to last a lifetime.
Are you facing critical decisions that could impact your retirement income? Hi, this is Mark Friedman, president of Friedman Financial, and since 1968, we've been providing comprehensive financial planning and investment advice to individuals residing on the North Shore and throughout the Merrimack Valley. We can help you plan for the retirement of your dreams. Call me today at 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. Or visit us at friedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts. And can't believe I've been doing this almost 4.5 years here at the station, providing financial advice in a language you can understand. And I hope the stories that I'm sharing today, it's a little bit different. I've been talking about my recent trip to India, humbling it a little bit. I've been humbled by this experience. Look, we've been through some difficult things here in America. There's a lot of rage that's building around this recent election and inauguration and our new president, whether you like him or not. I mean, everyone has an opinion right now. But I had the opportunity to leave this country for about 11 days to speak to a bunch of financial advisors in Mumbai, India, 600 of them, actually. And while those 2 days were incredibly heartening, warm, memorable, and frankly overwhelming by the response that we got, the 9 days before and after those, or the 4 and 5 days, however you want to figure it, where I got to immerse myself in the culture of India was a huge wake-up call. A wake-up call to a life that, frankly, is very hard to find here in America anymore. America is a very greed-driven culture. Respect for family is at a minimum. Respect for traditions and culture is at a minimum. Parents, grandparents, great-grandparents try really hard to instill those things in their children and grandchildren. But for whatever reason, the environment of America, the fast pace of America, the freedoms of America have ruptured that relationship. They've kind of torn away at that tapestry of family. And what I saw in India was something remarkable. It was amazing. In fact, I sometimes refer back, and I made this mention when I was in India, that what I saw in India this past week is what I experienced in Ireland in the early 80s. Now, if you go to Ireland today, Ireland is moving more like America is. But India is in infancy, in a developed state where pride of family, pride of being, pride of religion, pride of country is what is more important than anything else. I want you to imagine this. Imagine walking into any of our national parks. Imagine going to any national park, whether it's the Grand Canyon, whether it's Yosemite National Park, wherever it is. And being told that when you arrive there, that you as an American citizen can go into that park for a quarter. Yet if you are not an American citizen, you need to pay $15. Imagine that for a minute. Now, how would you feel? In India, that's how it works. I went to see the Taj Mahal last Tuesday, and it was an unbelievable experience. But every site that I went to that is a national treasure, cost an admission fee to go in and visit the museum, visit that place. Indians, if you were an Indian citizen, you went to a totally separate window, and you paid 40 rupee. 40 rupee is roughly 65 cents. Anybody else who wasn't an Indian citizen paid 1,000 rupee, which was $15. I didn't think anything of it until I thought, how would America react if we did the same thing? You see, India has a strong pride in who their people are. They want to make life as affordable as possible. They want Indians who live there to experience all that their country has to offer at the most reasonable cost. Because frankly, the India standard of living is much lower. The India income levels are far lower. And they're taking advantage of the fact that there are richer Westerners and Easterners, whether it's Chinese, Japanese, whether it's Germans, whether it's English, whether it's Americans and Australians, and take advantage of those people that come and charge them more. And that is a very well accepted philosophy. If you go to the markets in India, there's the Indian price and there's the tourist price. Fortunately, if you have hired an Indian guide, your Indian guide will bargain for you. You want to bargain? Good luck. You'll still get ripped off even though you think you got a good deal. Now, people said, Mark, you know, what language do they speak over in India? Well, they speak hundreds of different dialects. Hindu is the primary language, yet English is spoken by most. Though there were times when I was there when I turned to my wife, Laura, and I said, are they speaking English? And yes, they were. It's just a different kind of English. I mean, like anything else. Sometimes when I go to Alabama or Georgia, I can't understand what they're saying. But yeah, they're speaking English. Same thing. They were incredibly welcoming. I felt so safe in India. I want you to imagine asking yourself, would you be willing to walk the streets of Dorchester at 2 o'clock in the morning by yourself? Just wandering the streets for an hour and a half. Would you be willing to do it? Why? It's scary, isn't it? They make it feel very threatening. People look different. You make you feel different. Well, folks, I was in India. I walked the streets of India. It wasn't at 2 o'clock in the morning, but maybe 11:30 at night. Laura had gone to bed and I said, you know, I'm just going to go out and walk. And where 70% of the environment is slums, you're going to find yourself walking through slums, walking through some areas that are not the most visibly satisfying sights to see. You'll see homeless people. You'll see dogs laying out in the street, sound asleep. You'll walk by cows, because cows are sacred in India. They can walk the streets as easily as a human can. You'll see monkeys. You'll see people urinating on the street because they don't have a bathroom to go to. But as you walk, they all say hello. They all put their hands together and they'll say, in a pointed hands, put their hands clasped together up against their chest and they'll go, namaste. Everybody is peaceful. Nobody is bothered by anybody because everybody believes that everybody's going through something. What's fascinating to me there, though, that I learned is that 85% of marriages in India are still arranged marriages. Every guide that we had in every city that I went to, the guide, if she was female, or even the male, arranged marriages. Now, this is what happens with an arranged marriage, by the way. You know, we were asking these people about this stuff. And they were saying, I met my husband one time for about 2 hours. There are, just like there's JDate, you know, JDate or Match.com and all that kind of stuff, there's Match.com for arranged marriages. But the Match.com categories are not about the kids. It's the parents. And they offer up their son and or daughter. And here's what we bring. You see, when there's an arranged marriage, the wife, the woman who's going to be the wife, moves in with the son and his family. The husband lives at home with the family. The husband takes care of mom and dad. Maybe there's siblings. And the wife moves in. She leaves her family behind. But the wife also comes with something. It's called a dowry. Now, that dowry might be financial. It might be jewels and gold and silver. It might be skills. But it's fascinating. And everyone seems to do it. What's the divorce rate in India? Very little. Because it would be worse to disgrace the family, to disgrace the reputation. Mom and dad worked hard to find the right arrangement for me. And they keep to it. Now, admittedly, many of the people that I spoke with told me that when their children get to be the age of marriage, they may be okay with the children seeking what was called a love marriage. That's because men and women are now going into the workforce in India. Look, how many times have you called up, whether it's Dell service or some kind of a service department, and you get somebody in India, right? And they're so sickeningly nice to you. I beg your pardon, Mr. Friedman, or I'm so sorry to inconvenience you, sir. But Mr. Friedman, may I ask, could I put you on hold for just two more moments? I promise to be right back. You know, they're so nice. And you're thinking on the other end of the phone, just get the job done. Just do this. Stop being so nice to me. Just get it done. But their nature is they have been trained so well to build service standards unlike you and I have ever seen before. There was a woman that worked at the St. Regis Hotel where I stayed. Yes. So you don't, not everybody stays in slums, by the way. The 30% of the population lives a totally different lifestyle. So when I came out to speak, I was told that I was given a budget for four nights, that they were going to pay four nights in a five-star hotel, and I was given $800. First, I thought, is that per night in a five-star hotel? No. $800 is for four nights, $200 a night. And I'm thinking, what are you talking about? That's just not going to be possible. So I'm a Marriott guy. So I start looking at all the Marriott hotels, and now that Sheraton is part of the SPG program, I'm looking at all these options. And so the St. Regis looks, well, it's a five-star hotel. It's pretty nice. So the base cost for the room at the St. Regis Hotel is 12,000 rupee. 12,000 rupee for a base room. That's $180 at the St. Regis. So I said, well, let's liberalurge a little bit. So we moved up. Now, Laura and I paid about $250 a night at the St. Regis for a junior suite. It was huge. Unbelievably huge. Came with butler service. Every day the butler would show up. Mr. Friedman, do you have any items you'd like me to press for you today? Would you like us to bring tea or coffee to your room? It was just unbelievable. When we get back, I'm going to tell you about some of the people that worked at the hotel and the working conditions that they have, the service standards that they maintain, and how much they enjoy working at the hotel that they're at. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 4.9. We'll be right back.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run.
Do you ever wonder whether you'll have enough money to retire? Retiring for the Genius is a blueprint to prepare for a comfortable retirement. This easy-to-read guidebook on living your life in retirement is written by certified financial planner Mark Friedman and host of Dollars and Cents, heard here every Sunday morning from 8 o'clock until 9 a.m. You'll find the tools and templates helpful so you can prepare to make smart decisions on how to spend your money in retirement. If you're older than 55 and expect to spend between $4,000 and $10,000 a month in retirement, Retiring for the Genius is a treasure map for achieving your successful retirement.
when it comes to retiring, don't be a dummy. Pick up a copy of Retiring for the Genius at Amazon.com.
Pick up your treasure map for retirement. Available now at Amazon.com. Search Mark Friedman, Retiring for the Genius.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. If you've been listening to the show for the past 45 minutes, you might be saying to yourself, I thought this was a personal finance show. I thought I was going to get some advice on how to manage my money or some personal financial planning ideas. Well, that's usually what happens today. But, you know, sometimes we kind of have to take a couple steps back. And I like to share with you some real life experiences about money, but from a different perspective. And that's kind of what we're doing today. You know, one of the things that I've learned, and I've been very fortunate that, yes, we have a very successful business, but I also have another business where I am a professional motivational speaker and speaker to other financial advisors all around the world. I've spoken on almost every continent. I actually has been on every continent except for Antarctica. I don't believe there's a financial planning contingency down there. But whether it's been Australia, Fiji, Thailand, Brazil, Europe, I haven't been to Africa. So I guess I haven't been to Africa either yet, but maybe there'll be an opportunity at some point. But I recently returned from a trip to India where I spoke to 600 financial advisors, and that it's growing over there. And I was very humbled by the entire experience of what I've seen in India and how in such an infancy it is. I think back to the time in America, which I was not alive in, but where we lived in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s. And it wasn't about making more money than the next guy. It was about working hard, building traditions, being with your family, making sure that everyone was home every Sunday or everyone sat around the dinner table or we all watched television to see whatever it might have been. Maybe it was Howdy Doody that you watched it on. And we all went to the ball game together. Everybody looked forward to a celebratory event. Today in America, look, we've got Valentine's Day coming up next week. Valentine's Day is one of those holidays where we might give gifts to ones that we love, but oftentimes the attitude now has been, what do you want? I give you stuff. We buy stuff for each other all the time. We have what we need. We're just buying stuff just for the sake of buying stuff because it's the holiday. There's nothing traditional. We've lost a lot. The only tradition I think that only holds true here in America, the only holiday that brings us back to the 1950s and the 1960s is Thanksgiving. That's pretty much the only holiday. When I was in India, they celebrated Republic Day, the 26th of January. It's the celebration of the day in which India became an independent country. And it doesn't matter whether you are the poorest person in India or the richest person. Everybody holds celebrations. They're fancy or not, but they all share the same colors, the same spirit, the same energy, and the country stops for a day to appreciate the country that it's become. We don't even do that on the 4th of July anymore. The 4th of July is more about maybe seeing the fireworks if we're lucky, maybe getting together for, you know, a barbecue. But it's certainly not about the celebration of the country. Maybe in certain parts of the country it is. Where we live here in Massachusetts, frankly, it's another day off. That's all it is. And people, for days, were talking about the excitement around Republic Day in India. When I last left you, I was telling you about how I had about the journey that I was on this past week, and I just got back from India. I got to speak to 600 financial advisors, and like I was telling those that have been listening earlier, 70% of India lives in the slums. You know, you've probably seen slum conditions when you've gone to St. Lucia or gone down to the Caribbean islands, and you've seen some of that. But it's pretty small. Imagine a world. Imagine 70% of all living areas east of the Mississippi as slums. And surrounded by those slums, or within those slums, all of a sudden a high-rise apartment or a high-rise office building emerges. That's what it's like. So, yes, I was part of the I didn't stay in the slums when I went there. And the people that I was speaking to didn't live in the slums either. They were financial advisors for the middle class, for the middle part of America, like this girl who I met, Kashmina, or Kashmira was her name, at the St. Regis Hotel. She was a guest relations person. Her job was when you got off the elevator and stepped into the hotel, hello, Mr. and Mrs. Friedman. She got to know who we are. How are you today? How was your day? When Laura and I were sitting down having breakfast, she'd come over and greet us, talk to us, say hello, make sure that we had anything we needed. Kashmira must have been, I would guess, 24, 25 years old. She was beautiful, dark-skinned, in wonderful shape, dressed impeccably, makeup beautifully placed, and we got to know her. Got to know her pretty well, actually. She was so excited. She loved Laura's smile. She loved Laura's energy. She says, you know, many people come to these countries and they come as business people and they're just, they can't get over the jet lag. They're miserable. They're demanding. And we were just enjoying it. So she really got to know Laura and really enjoyed her. So we're sitting down one day and we're talking with her. And I said, you know, what does your typical day look like? She says, well, yesterday was my day off. And all day long, all I did was sleep. My mother kept on coming in to wake me up. And I said, Mom, I just want to sleep. Kashmira works 12-hour shifts, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. every single day, 6 days a week, at the St. Regis Hotel. A beautiful, magnificent hotel. It's where a lot of very well-to-do people stay and average folk like me. But the St. Regis Hotel, like I told you, Laura and I were at a junior suite, $250 a night. Okay, so you got to put everything in perspective here. However, $250 a night, but if you want to have drinks in the hotel, if you want to get a martini, that'll cost $18. So drinks are ridiculously expensive, but a lot of people don't drink in India either. But so Kashmira is telling us she works 12-hour days, 8 to 8. How close does she live to the hotel? Oh, about 2 hours away. 2 hours away. She takes the train. Takes the train, which costs her 40 rupees each way. 40 rupees is less than a dollar, about 60 cents. Now, the trains are packed. They are like cattle call. I mean, they squeeze people in. The windows on a train don't exist. It's like bars. It's jail bars. You can hang your arm out. You can. The doors. Imagine riding the T. Get this. Imagine riding on the T and the doors never close. So you can just hang out, holding on, watching the stuff go by. Everything's open. There are no doors. There's openings, but the doors never close. And so you sit in there packed, sweating oftentimes because it can be so hot and muggy and sticky. Imagine 90 and 100 degree temperatures, humid, and deodorant is not a plenty in India. You need to go to the bathroom? You better hold it because there are no bathrooms on the train. Or you choose to go where it's convenient. It's really gross. Now, I didn't travel on those trains, but that's where the locals travel. So Kashmira takes a two-hour train each way. She doesn't have to dress in her uniform. No one would dare dress in their uniform on the trains out of the risk of filth, smelling, damage, whatever it might be. In fact, you're advised not even to bring your lunch on the train. And I'm going to explain to you what happens hopefully I'll remember about the lunch thing. She gets to the hotel. She arrives there. She can shower if she likes. Not in the nicest of shower conditions. It's not the spa that she gets to go to, I assure you. And all of her laundry, all of her uniforms, all the uniforms that are available are provided by the hotel. She gets to change into them. Is there a break room where she can take a nap? No. She can step outside. But there's not much of a break room, and she goes to work. And she's on her feet the entire time for 12 hours every day. Yes, they provide her with meals. They provide her with meals. She gets one meal a day. One meal a day. So you better eat before you got there. You better eat afterwards. Okay? She gets a half-hour break during her 12-hour shift. What does she make? Kashmira makes, and she's a better paid person at the hotel, 25,000 rupees a month. 25,000 rupees a month translates in American dollars to about $400 a month. That's $100 a week. Imagine that. And that's considered normal. That's considered normal for a educated. She went to school. She is still studying at the university. She's taking some classes. But she's making 25,000. Hopefully, if she moves up, she can get up to around 40,000 rupees a month. 40,000. So she'd be making, I don't know, $600 a month. Now, this is the amazing part. She wants a financial advisor. She wants to work with a financial planner. Really? The financial planning industry is growing like leaps and bounds. Because you know what? In India, there is no such thing as Social Security. There is no such thing as a retirement age. If you work, you make money. If you don't, you starve. It is that simple. There is no subsidized housing, though there are places that are cheaper to live than others. But one thing is for certain, and I was told by this by many of the guides, while there are a lot of people out there begging, and yes, you will find people begging, they're never begging so that they can have food. Food is always abundant and available in India. There's a religious sect called Sikhism. The Sikh temples all throughout India serve hundreds of thousands of meals a day. Free meals. It's part of what they do. That's how they give back. If you can't afford a meal, you can go three times a day to the Sikh temple and find food. You can find food on the streets. You can find lots of things around. But interestingly, in India, you know what their savings rate is? 30%. They have been told that no matter how much you make, you save 30% of your pay. 30%! Because you're going to have to do that because it's going to be up to you to support your life if you do choose to retire or cut back on work. So here she is making 25,000 rupees, $400. $400 a month. And she wants to save 120 of it. Now, does she have to pay taxes? If you're making under about $50,000 a year in India, there are no taxes to pay. But still, she's saving 30,000 and she wants to set up a mutual fund. And she has $120 a month to invest. And so she's working with financial advisors to do that. And those are the types of financial planners I was talking to. Now, granted, she's on the young side. Some people can save more than that. But even a doctor, I met a doctor couple. They're people in India. What he expects to live off of in India when he retires, he needs $3,000 a month. A doctor needs $3,000 a month to live comfortably. It's amazing. Now, everybody's different. There's all sorts of ranges. Like I told you, in my office at Friedman Financial, some people need $2,000 a month. Others need $20,000 a month. There is no right way to do it. But understand that you should never view financial planning as only for the rich. In fact, those that need it most are the people who are serious about having positive cash flow in their life, more money coming into their household than they're spending, and they're putting some money aside. That's what great financial planning is. And you even have the benefit here in America that Social Security's around. Or maybe there's a pension, or maybe there's a 401k plan. Those are all great things. We have much to be thankful for here in this country. There's a lot that we complain about. You know what? Let's focus on the stuff we can control. You can control how you spend your money. You can control how you save your money. You can control where you choose to eat out, the clothes you choose to buy, and the relationships that you try to build with your children. That's what you should focus on. What our government will do, what this nation will do with its tax plan, with its immigration policy, whatever it is. Folks, we can't control that. No matter how large the protests get or how loud you try to complain and yell and send messages and texts and phone mail, good luck. Focus on what you can control. And at the end of the day, you will be so much happier. And with that, I wish you all a great day. I wish the Patriots all the greatest of success today at Super Bowl Sunday. Go Pats. And I will see you next Sunday. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
Thanks for tuning into Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. During the show, specific investments may have been discussed. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Please consult a certified financial planner, tax professional, or attorney to determine what is appropriate for you. Consider your investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of an investment company before investing. That's because investing involves risk, including a loss of principal. A prospectus contains this and other information about mutual funds, variable annuities, and variable annuity subaccounts. Prospectuses should be read carefully before making an investment. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment and financial planning advice is offered through Mark's firm, Friedman Financial, which is a registered investment advisor and a separate entity from LPL. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next Sunday at 8 a.m.
The prior show was a paid program that does not express the views, opinions, or beliefs of North Shore 104.9, the station management, its employees, or staff.